Now the last section begins from 17. Now the Nishkam Karma Yogi is attaining liberation. Tad bhudayas tad atmanas tan nishtas tad parayanaha kachanti apuna avritim jnana nidhutta kalmashaha. When one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. That's right. I read the commentary to 16 by Vishwanath Chakravarti, but I didn't. Okay, we'll go back. Jnanina tattu agyanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham aditya jnanam prakashayati tatpana. When, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights everything in the daytime. So when one comes to the mode of goodness, then he sees these interrelationships between the guna, the atma, and paramatma. And then he becomes enlightened by this clear understanding. That's Baladeva Vibhushan's commentary. Then he approaches or takes shelter of the super soul and he begins to become liberated. Somehow I didn't skip that. The mode of goodness is being described here, and the mode of goodness is illuminating and brings knowledge. Sattvat sanjayate jnana. So from sattva-gun comes jnana. So this is the jnana being described here. So detachment and peace are liberating, but these are also qualities of gunas. That's the mode of goodness. Whereas the tendency to enjoy or to initiate action is a cause of bondage, and it's from the passion and ignorance. Because someone who wants to enjoy is passionate, and therefore he wants to work in the world. That's initiating action, his own action. Okay.
How does he take shelter of the super soul?
We'll find out now.
Tat also
used
both the verses, 16 and 17.
What's that?
Tat param.
Tat param.
The rest of the verses is Tat Buddha, same
Shabbat version
both
the
verses. Tat
Buddha,
Tat
Manas. 16 and 17.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Tat is the same. That means the Supreme. Tat param, yeah. Parameshwara. The commentators use Parameshwara in this section. Supreme Lord. Tat Param. Okay. Let's go to the next section. Tad bhudayas tad atmanas tad nishtas tad parayanaha kachanti apana avritim jnana nirudhuta kalmashaha. When one's intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. So, when the devotee or when the Nishkam Karma Yogi understands that the Lord is impartial, then he fixes his intelligence on the quality of the super soul. And then he advances. Because he realizes that the Lord is just facilitating my desires. Now I can desire liberation, and the Lord will help me. If I desire material sense gratification, then the Lord will engage me in that. Like this. So he knows that this is the Supreme Lord, and he's impartial. So here, the Nishkam Karma Yogi is coming to the point of liberation. He's in Jnana Nishta. He has knowledge that he's not the body, that there is a Supreme Parameshwar who is impartial, who's controlling everything. So he fixes his intelligence on the Supreme, Tad Buddhayas. And that knowledge of the Supreme, it purifies him. But to come to Tanishta, he must give up his Sattvic Bhav Nishta and go further. Because he was, in the last verse, it describes the Sattvic Bhav Nishta, how he's enlightened, right? That's the mode of goodness. So that he has to go further. So here, the second line indicates some bhakti. Tanishta tat parayana. Because he's taking shelter and has faith in that Supreme. So what is the beginning of bhakti? Adau shadha. Right? So there's some faith. Nishta means some faith. And he's taking shelter. It means he feels himself subordinate to the Supreme Lord and feels submissive. So the second line, the second part of the shloka indicates bhakti is coming there a little bit more. Maybe a half a cup or something like that. You know. More and more bhakti being added to the recipe. Now if you look at the Bhagavatam 11.19.1, you'll see Krishna tells Uddhava that even a jnani should surrender his jnana to me. 11.19.1 in the Uddhava Gita. Even the jnani should surrender his jnana to me. So the Nishkam Karma Yogi also has to kind of rise above his sattvic jnana and develops a kind of nirgun bhakti. He's like heading in that direction. That jnana nirdutta kalmasha is the knowledge purifies him, whereby he sees that the Lord is helping him, facilitating him, the Lord is impartial, so therefore he feels more faith and he wants to take shelter of the Lord. But gradually he has to actually give up the jnana, sattvic jnana, and he has to develop bhakti jnana, you can say, devotional faith, devotional knowledge. Okay, text 18.
Vidyavanaya sampanne brahmane gavihastini shuni chayva shvapake cha pandita samadarshinaha.
The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. So now, the Nishkam Karma Yogi transcends the modes of material nature. Nibu. And he becomes disinterested in accepting the gunas any further. Thus, he becomes equipoised. And by understanding and focusing on the impartial nature of the Supreme, he himself becomes impartial. Pandita Samadarshina. So you can see how the last section is influencing this section too. So, Vidyavanaya Sampane. When the person has, you know, he's fully equipped with two things, Vidya and Vanaya. Vidya means knowledge, Vanaya means like gentleness. So this is the symptom of someone who has vidya. He is gentle. So if someone is not gentle, then you know that he doesn't have knowledge. Now, what is that vidya? That every living being is part and parcel of the Supreme. They are in him and they are his. As mentioned in this chapter or the previous chapter, Yajgyatva na punar moham evam yasasi pandava. Yena Bhutane Sheshani Drakshasya Mato Mahi. You'll see that they are in me. So everyone, the Brahmana and the Gavi, the Brahmana and the cow are in the mode of Sattva-gun. They're better than the Hastini, or that is in Rajagun. The elephant is in Rajagun. And the Shuni and Shopake, the dog and dog eater are in the mode of ignorance. But Pandita Samardarshana, he's impartial, so he sees them all equally, impartially. And he doesn't discriminate between them. Because he's gunati, so he doesn't even notice these differences. Because the pandits are above the modes of nature, therefore they don't discriminate the different modes of nature which are present in the different creatures. Although the cow is in goodness, the elephant in passion, and the dog is in ignorance, because the pandita is above the modes, therefore he does not concern with the modes of nature. He doesn't hardly even notice them. He just sees there's a jiva in the body of a creature. Due to his desires and karma, he has a certain body. And he sees them and deals them equally. So these are some further symptoms of the person who's Jnana Nirdutta Kalmasha, that he sees them equally, these persons. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan says that this verse is explaining the benefit of knowing that God is impartial. The one who meditates on the fact that God is impartial, he himself becomes impartial. Okay, text 19. We're moving quickly. We're going to finish the chapter today.
Ihaiva terajita sargo yesham samye stitam manaha nirdosham hi samam brahma tasmat brahmani stitaha.
Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. So their minds are established in sameness and equanimity, or impartiality. That's carryover from the previous verse. Right? Samye. You'll see in this verse samam and samye, which was pandita sama darshana. Right? So this is the point being carried into the next verse. Here in 10:19. The Lord is glorifying the equal vision of this person mentioned in the previous verse, the Pandit. And he says that in this life, right, certainly by them, they will have conquered the sarga, the creation of birth and death in the material world. Right? Even the sadaka, it means. In this life. Not that he dies and goes back to Godhead, but ihaiva. Jita sarga, he conquers the material nature. He conquers material existence. And samya means equilibrium. Knowing that the acts of the material world have nothing to do with me. Samye. Prabhupada comments on the word sarga in a letter, actually. It says, if we don't give up our strong desires for material enjoyment, then we must take birth repeatedly. But the Nishkam Karma Yogi has already given that up. He doesn't want to enjoy. It's not interesting. At least he's given up the desire to enjoy the fruits of his work. And now we hear that at this point, he's above the modes of nature. and his mind and intelligence are fixed in the Supreme. Gyananirdutta Kalmasha is free from all sins. And he's taking shelter of God. He's developed some faith in God and taking shelter of him. And he becomes nirdosh. Just like the Lord is nirdosh, he also becomes nirdosha. He's samma brahma, equal to the Lord. Flawless like Brahman. Prabhupada writes, the Lord is flawless because he is without attraction or hatred. In his commentary, in 19. Similarly, when a living entity is without attraction and hatred, he also becomes flawless and eligible to enter into the spiritual sky. That is what it means, nirdosha, samma brahma. Now, one might ask, how should such a person act? And the next verse will describe that, his behavior. Text 20. Na prahrishyet priyam prapya no dvijet prapya cha priyam sthira buddhira sammudho brahmavid brahmani stitaha. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. So we see, na prarishyet priyam prapya, that he's not over elated when he gets something which is priya, or dear. And nodvijet prapya cha priyam. He doesn't get disturbed when he receives something apriya, or not dear to him. Now these words, prarishyet and nodvijet, you'll see that they're in the imperative form of the Sanskrit verb. That you must do this, or you should do this. Right? So it indicates the sadhaka. He has to practice like this. In this stage of sadhana, one must practice these things. Being transcendental, or not being overexcited when you get a rasgulla, or something nice, pizza, or something that you like. You know, Amra Ras. You know, I know you like here Amra Ras. And so you shouldn't feel too happy when you get a nice big, you know, lota of Amra Ras. If you feel too happy, that means you're not practicing in this as a sadhaka. This sadhana should be practiced. And if they give you some, you know, Corella, then you should feel that's nice also. Krishna gave this to me. So then if you do this, you'll become sthira buddhi, fixed.
So this appears to be one of the main themes of Bhagavad Gita at this point.
Yes.
Many places Krishna
says. Yes, yes.
All over.
Right. And we see in the beginning, Mamaka Pandavas Jaiva, Dhritarashtra was the opposite of this. The bad guy. That's why he only gets one verse in the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna gets the rest of them. So, it is mentioned that because of ahankar, a false ego, people become deluded by happiness and distress. Being free from such ego, the wise remain asammudho, unbewildered, undeluded. So he's fixed in this understanding and he is not bewildered. But he's brahmani sthitaha, situated in Brahma. He's brahmavid. Prabhupada has commented in a class, I believe, He said, he told a story to illustrate this point. He said that there was a man who was taking care of horses. Right? What's your word for horses? Ghoda. Huh? Ghoda. Oh yeah, Ghoda. Right, so a person, he's a Ghodadhara or something, Ghodawala. He's taking care of horses. But he won a lottery that he won 10 lakhs of rupees. Right? So this guy, when he heard that he won, he was so excited that he got a heart attack and died immediately. And he couldn't enjoy the money. Prabhupada tells a story like this. He dropped dead on the spot. But he said, a devotee thinks, all right, by Krishna's grace, I've gotten this material asset. Let me engage it in the service of the Lord. That is his happiness. So, Baladeva Vibhushan said that this verse can be taken in both ways, that for the sadhaka or the siddha. The sadhaka should practice like this, and the siddha, he has already attained this. That's verse 20. He doesn't identify with the transformations of the subtle body, the vikaras of the sukshma linga. Right? He doesn't identify with the transformations of the tonki tela, the subtle body. Okay? Prabhupada writes, oh my God. The symptom of the self-realized person, the symptoms are given here. The first symptom is that he is not illusioned by the false identification of the body with his true self. He knows perfectly well that he is not this body, but he is the fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is therefore not joyful in achieving something, nor does he lament in losing anything which is related to his body. Okay, he knows he's not the body, so he's not so excited to get these things. Text 21. Moving right along. Bhayasparsheshvasaktatma vindatyatma niyatsukam sabrahma yoga yuktatma sukam akshayam ashnute. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. Bhaiya. Bhaiya. Hey, Bhaiya. No, so this Bhaiya Sukh is for the materialist. Right? And Sparsheshu means touch, which means sex life, sex desire, sexual activity. And it indicates all of the various senses. Is that true? Yes, I think so. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's Parshan later. Anyway. Srila Prabhupada says that the word Atmani here indicates the relation between the soul and the super soul. That is called rasa dance, real happiness. Because Prabhupada is speaking on bringing us to the ultimate conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita by bringing in the rasa dance at this stage. The first line, Bhaya Sparsheshu Asaktatma, indicates the sadhaka, that he's practicing not being attracted to the sense pleasures, especially of touch. Because actually the touch is with the skin, and the skin is the largest sense, right, around the whole body. Because you have eyes, nose, and this is not, so but the skin is like everywhere, it's like, right? It's the biggest of all the senses. So when the sadhaka becomes sabrahma yoga yuktatma sukham akshayam ashnate, then he achieves unlimited happiness. Akshayam means not flickering, it's steady. But the sadhaka needs strong, fixed intelligence. That's what keeps him away from the sense objects. Because he's not Brahma Yukto yet. He's not completely connected with the Supreme. So therefore, he's more dependent on strong, fixed, shastric intelligence to keep him controlled from the sense objects. So, Prabhupada writes, the highest pleasure in terms of matter is sex pleasure. The whole world is moving under its spell, and a materialist cannot work at all without this motivation. But a person engaged in Krishna consciousness can work with greater vigor without sex pleasure, which he avoids. That is the test in spiritual realization. Spiritual realization and sex pleasure go ill together. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur asks a question. He says, why would someone who drinks nectar, who continually drinks nectar, why would he want to eat mud? Because he's drinking his amaras, or, you know, some nectar drink. Why would he, you know, bend over and pick up some mud and start to eat that? It's impossible. So this person has no tendency to get happiness from the sense objects. There's no tendency, and intellectually he also doesn't want to do it. Until the tendency is very strong for getting internal pleasure, then there has to be this intellectual conviction that this is bad for me. So the next verse describes what that is. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyanta vanta kaunteya nateshu ramate muna. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. So this is his philosophy which keeps him fixed. Dukkha yonaya, of all miseries. Yoni means the womb. Right? So then, sense gratification is the mother of all miseries. The person knows that in the future I will suffer if I do this. So that helps to keep him fixed. So the sadhaka becomes free from the gunas by a combination of the intellectual conviction and the higher taste, which we will now describe in verse 24 that's coming up. Prabhupada says that we must tolerate the urges. Vacha Vegam, Manasakrura Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Hasta Vegam. If a doctor tells a sick person not to eat solid food, the patient may think, I need to eat solid food. How can I live without solid food? Because he has a habit to eat solid food. But if he can tolerate, then he can become cured more quickly. So before leaving the body, the more we can practice tolerating, the quicker and easier devotional service becomes. So now the result is given in text 23. If you can tolerate all these things, right? What will happen?
Shaknoti haivaya shodhum prak sharira vimokshanat kama krodhod bhavam vegam sayukta sa sukhi naraha.
Before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. So tolerate. Showed whom? One must tolerate. Iha eva, again, means in this body. Iha eva. Praksharida, mamokshana. Before giving up the body, right? So that we do that now. The vegas are there. There's the famous word, vega. Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, mudra pasta vegam. So one must tolerate these if he wants knowledge. Kama and krodha are mentioned here. So one must tolerate lust. And when the lust transforms into anger, then it manifests in the mind and in the eyes. From lust comes anger, and from anger comes a pushing wave in the mind and in the eyes. So here it's saying one should tolerate it at that point, before it goes any further. One should control it at that time. Then he can make progress. So you can feel like when the anger brings, the kama, lust brings anger, and then when you feel angry, you feel it in the mind and in the eyes. So before it goes to the rest of the body, to the mouth and to the arms and the chest, and, you know, then you stop it right at that point, then that's good enough. That's the point. When you feel yourself getting angry, then you have to say, whoa now. Whoa. And stop. Right? Like a little bell should go off in there. Whoa now. That's the American expression. Little bell should go off in your head. Ding, 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 ding. Danger, danger. Anger's coming. Be careful. Saru sabdhan. So, you cannot just continue tolerating. You know, just you have to get some other rasa. Param drishva nivarta. So that's described in the next verse. Yanto sukuntararamas tatante jyotir evaya sa yogi brahma nirvanam brahma bhuto dikacchati. One whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately, he attains the Supreme. So how to tolerate? Relish spiritual pleasure. And also realize that sense pleasures end in misery, which is verse 22. So 22 and 24 have to use together. The positive and the negative. Here's the positive side. The negative was that dukkha yonaya evate adyanta banta kompaya. These statements. Prabhupada writes, unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from the external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? A liberated person enjoys happiness by a factual experience. He can, therefore, sit silently at any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. Such a liberated person no longer desires external material happiness. This state is called Brahma-bhuta, attaining which one is assured of going back to Godhead, back to home. So the word anta is there three times in this verse. His happiness is within. Sukha anta. He's active within. Anta aramas. And his anta jyoti. He's illuminated within. Sa yogi. He's a real yogi, mystic. And Brahma nirvana. Brahma bhuto nigacchati. He's liberated and attains the supreme. So there's a lot going on inside. Not just karma yogi, okay, but now he's advanced karma yogi. Not just work, work, work. Right? He's relishing pleasure. Right then, he's tasting his practice, his relationship with the Supreme. So we should always remember that. We should always strive for reviving our relationship with the Supreme by chanting the holy names of the Lord. Text 25. Labhante brahma nirvanam rishaya kshina kalmashaha chinna dvaidha yathatmana sarva bhuta hite rataha. Those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, whose minds are engaged within and who are always busy working for the welfare of all living beings and who are free from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme. So many sadhana siddhas attain perfection by the practice described here. Many persons attain perfection by practice. Labhante. Right, they achieve Brahma Nirvana. The rishis. Rishaya. Kshina Kalmasha. Prabhupada has commented that. Kshina Kalmasha means those trying to reduce the fever of sinful life. If we are ill with fever, we must reduce the temperature. By controlling ourselves, according to the prescription of a doctor, we can reduce it. We are thinking that by what often people are thinking that by increasing the fever of material enjoyment, we'll be happy. That's the philosophy of the materialist. And then Prabhupada gave an example of this rich man's wife and the man's maidservant. They both had a fever, but the maidservant's fever was higher. So the man's wife was upset. How can she have a fever higher than mine? I should get a higher fever than her. The maidservant can't have a higher fever than me because I'm her boss. Therefore, let me try to increase my fever more so that I could be superior to her. This is a kind of mad mentality. So Prabhupada told this analogy. In this regard. Text 26. Tama krodha vimuktanam yatinam yatta chetasam abhito brahma nirvanam Vartate viditatmanam. Those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. So all of these things may sound very difficult, you know. Busy working for the welfare of all beings, free from all sin, always relishing happiness within, being illumined within, active within. Right? So many different things. One has to rise above the dualities of doubts, tolerate the urges of the senses, realizing that material pleasures are the source of future miseries. So in order to encourage the Nishkam Karma Yogi, Krishna uses the word abhita, which means very quickly. Abhita, assured in the near future, not far away, but very soon. It's a close by. So Baladev Vidyabhushan quotes the example of the fish, the tortoise, and the bird. Matsya kurma vihamdamaha. In his commentary, Prabhupada quotes the verse also. Darsha dhyana samsparshaya matsya kurma vihangama. So, darsha dhyana samsparshaya is in the tritya. It means by darshan, by seeing, by dhyana, by meditation, and by touching the fish, turtle, and the bird, they pushnanti, it means they nourish their children. Apatyani. They're swani apatyani. Their own offspring. They maintain their offspring. It means they give birth also to their offspring in these three ways. The fish lays eggs upstream and then just sits close by and just looks at with the eyes. Darshan. Then the korma, Mother Korma lays the eggs and then is in a distant place just meditating. Dhyan. The korma is like a yogi doing dhyan. And she, by meditating on the eggs, it helps the eggs to hatch. By the fish looking at the eggs, it helps the eggs to hatch. And by the bird, actually, samsparshaya, directly sitting on top of the eggs, it helps the eggs to hatch. So pushnanti, in this way they're nourishing their offspring in such a way. So Krishna says, tataham api padmaja. Similarly, I also do that to my devotees who are sincere. They're like my children. So that means, okay, they may struggle, but I'm also there helping them. So this indicates that for those who endeavor sincerely and seriously, as described in verse 26, right, they're free from anger and material desires, they're self-realized, they're always endeavoring for perfection, they're disciplined. So for those persons, the perfection is readily available. Why? Because the super soul is concerned about those who act in this fashion. The Lord cares about His devotees. By fixing the mind on the Lord, they evoke His mercy. By the devotees thinking about the Supreme, the Supreme also thinks about them. It's a reciprocal relationship. And Prabhupada writes that, similarly, the devotee in Krishna consciousness, although far away from the Lord's abode, can elevate himself to that abode simply by thinking of Him constantly, by engagement in Krishna consciousness. So we think of the Lord, and the Lord thinks of us. And when the Lord thinks of us, that means we're getting His mercy. When He sees someone always endeavoring for perfection and trying to think of Him and surrender to Him, then he reciprocates. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that this verse answers a question. The question is, how long will it take to attain Brahma Nirvana for one who has realized the Atma but not the Paramatma? Right? It won't take very long. Abhita. But for those who, Baladeva Vidyabhushan says, for those who control the mind, then, and the kama and krodha, then Paramatma realization also follows. He'll get that. So it's right around the corner for this person. Paramatma realization is right around the corner. Just going to happen soon. So he's self-realized. He's just about to realize the Paramatma. He's controlled the senses and the mind. He's always endeavoring. He's disciplined himself. He's free from attachment to the fruits of the work. He's free from sense gratification, from the desires for sense gratification. So he's like ready to begin a more internal type of process. His happiness is within. He's rejoicing within. He's active within. And he's illumined within. So there's a lot going on within. So now he can begin this internal yoga practice, which is a kind of anga of Nishkam Karma Yoga. In the next verse, it is described Ashtanga, the Ashtanga practice. Because the person is shooting for liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. So one might ask, how does he do that? So here Krishna describes that. So the last three verses are considered sutras of chapter 6, which is all about Ashtanga Yoga. This is a preliminary preview of chapter 6. And so for one whose heart has become purified by Nishkam Karma Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga is superior to Jnana Yoga. So the Nishkam Karma Yogi, as a part of his Nishkam Karma practice, yoga practice, he begins to practice Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga can also be practiced by him as a part of his sadhana. Okay? That's the next two verses. Sparshan kritva bahir bhayang chakshus chanvantare bruvaho pranapana samo kritva nasabhyantara charino Yatendraya mano buddhir munir moksha parayanaha vakatecha vaya kroho sa sadamukta evasa. Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows, suspending the inward and outward breaths within the nostrils, and thus controlling the mind, senses, and intelligence, the transcendentalist, aiming at liberation, becomes free from desire, fear, and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. So here, sparshan refers to all of the objects of the senses: touch, form, sound, taste, and aroma. So he keeps them outside. Because they are like hiding in the mind. So he tries to keep them outside by practicing pranayam and pratyahara, etc. Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes that when one's heart is purified by nishkam karma, one can then perform ashtanga yoga to realize God. All the sense objects are outside, but the mind has samskaras, impressions. So he practices pratyahara to keep his mental desires in check. This is keeping the sense objects outside. So it's not that he runs off into the forest and starts doing Ashtanga Yoga, but he's practicing it while he's doing his Nishkam Karma. It's as like a part of his Nishkam Karma practice. Prabhupada writes, after explaining the above principles of liberation in the Supreme, the Lord gives instruction to Arjuna as to how one can come to that position by the practice of the mysticism or yoga known as Ashtanga Yoga, which is divisible into an eightfold procedure called Yam, Niyam, Asam, Pranayam, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. In the sixth chapter, this subject of yoga is explicitly detailed, and at the end of the fifth chapter is only preliminarily explained. So that's what these two verses are. A preliminary explanation of the sixth chapter. So one might think, hey, what about Jnana Yoga? Why Krishna didn't talk about Jnana Yoga? Right? Because after reading the first four chapters, one may think that, you know, it's supposed to be there, right? That's the, right after Karma Yoga comes Jnana Yoga. But Krishna skips it and goes right to Ashtanga Yoga. Right? So the answer is given in this chapter. That's why Krishna spoke this chapter, to answer this question. Because in the beginning of the chapter, remember, he said that one who thinks that Sankhya Yoga and Karma Yoga are different is just a fool, a child. Right? So actually, he said they're one, because the goal is the same. The ultimate goal of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga is to come to bhakti. In the beginning of Nishkam Karma Yoga, the person is very attached, so karma is predominant in his practice. But as he makes advancement, jnana becomes prominent in his practice, and karma takes a back seat. So it becomes more like Jnana Yoga, in a sense. In other words, the Karma Yogi goes through the Jnana Nishtha stage, and he's doing this yoga, his Nishkam Karma Yoga, but his knowledge predominates over his activities. And we see that he's getting some deep realizations here. He's becoming liberated. He's free from the modes of nature, Vidya Vinaya Sampade, Pandita Samardarshina. Right? That's knowledge. Vidya. Full knowledge, sampane. So the jnana begins to take the prominence in his practice. So Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga are really the same things, which are just leading to bhakti. They're just different levels of the same thing, different stages. And that's what Krishna told Arjuna in the beginning. Even in the third chapter he told him this. And then again in the fifth chapter he told him again. Right? We look back. He says that they're both good for liberation. Sankhya Yoga Pratak Bala Pravadantina Pandita Ekam Apyastita Samyat Ubayor Vinditepalam. Those who are actually learning say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. Ekam Sankhyam Cha Yogam Cha Yapashiti Sapashiti. He sees them as the same, that person really sees. So Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga are not that different. It's the same yoga system, it's just a development. Because you can't do Jnana Yoga unless you do Karma Yoga first, unless you like just fall out of the Vaikuntha or something, you know. Unless you're really a super elevated person. And that's very rare, that doesn't happen. So by doing Nishkam Karma, one comes to the mode of goodness, then he gets all this knowledge, he goes through the Jnana Nishtha stage, and then everything's happening within, he becomes internally absorbed, introspective. He's no longer looking toward the external sense objects. So now he's going to start practicing Ashtanga Yoga, where he sits down and he's meditating on the Super Soul within. Now he's already fixed, he understands that there's a soul and a Super Soul. Because he understands how The Lord is neutral and is just facilitating the jivas in this material world. He realized, I'm not this body. So he realizes that you're not your body, you're not your body also, you're not your body, and everybody's spirit soul. And there must be some supreme spirit, right? And gradually he comes to realize these things. So now he can begin a preliminary practice. So the last verse in the chapter summarizes everything. Bhoktaram jagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam yatpamam shantim richati. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material existence. So we have in this verse that Krishna is the Bhoktaram, the supreme enjoyer or beneficiary. Krishna is establishing himself as the recipient or the receiver of all kinds of religious practices. In this verse, he's installing himself as the Ishwar and the beneficiary or enjoyer of all the different kinds of religious practices. He's Bhaktaram Jagya, which means he enjoys the offerings of all the karmis in Karmakanda and in Sakam Karma Yoga. And even in Nishkam Karma Yoga, because it's Yajna. Everything the Nishkam Karma Yogi does is Yajna. So he is the enjoyer of all of the fruits of karma, all the offerings by the karmis. And Tapasam, he's Bhoktaram Tapasam. He's the enjoyer of all of the results of the jnanis, who perform austerities. And he's Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. He's the enjoyer of those who are practicing Ashtanga Yoga, because he's Maheshwara, the Paramatma in the heart, who is situated in every atom and within the universe, also as Garbhodaksha and Mahavishnu. So the Ashtanga Yogi is there meditating on the Paramatma. So he's the Maha-Ishwara. And then Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, he's the friend of all living beings in the form of the pure Vaishnavas, his bhaktas. In this way, he is the enjoyer of all the activities of devotional service also. So again, another cup of bhakti is thrown into the recipe. His devotees are the... He is the well-wisher of all beings through the medium of his devotees. This is explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti.
Devotees are the agents carrying bhakti for distribution.
Right. His agents. So, let us read Prabhupada's commentary. This fifth chapter is a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how Karma Yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with the complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is Bhakti Yoga, and Jnana Yoga is a path leading to Bhakti Yoga. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Absolute, and the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God as his fragmental part and parcel. He comes into contact with Maya due to the desire to lord it over Maya, and that is the cause of his many sufferings. As long as he is in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter, because it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. So that's like nishkam karma. The more one is advanced, the more he is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions, one who is nishta, remains factually in the transcendental stage or Brahma Nirvana. The Eightfold Yoga mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of yam, niyam, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which alone can award peace to the human being. It is the highest perfection of life. So you can see how Prabhupada, he summarizes the whole section, practically the whole chapter, just, you know, and bringing it all into one paragraph. So this chapter explains that by performing nishkam karma, one becomes liberated by knowing both the Atma and the Paramatma. And the yogi can become liberated only by performing some bit of bhakti, right, to the super soul. There has to be some tinge of bhakti there. So the jnanis and the karma yogis attain knowledge of both jivatma and paramatma by nishkam karma yoga, and thus they attain liberation. This is the essence of chapter 5. So in order to get full meditation, one must realize the super soul. There's no liberation unless there's some super soul understanding or realization. And in order for the yogi to realize the super soul, there has to be some bit of bhakti there mixed in. Because bhakti is the actual agent which brings the success to all of the yoga systems, whether it's karma yoga, jnana yoga, or ashtanga yoga. So when the nishkam karma yoga yogi begins to realize the supreme and becomes internally absorbed, he begins to meditate on the supreme, and he can realize the super soul when there's some slight tinge of bhakti. And then later, when he gets the association of a real bhakta, Vaishnava, then he can begin the practice of pure devotion. But just to realize the super soul, he actually has to go beyond, there has to be some bhakti there. It has to go beyond just the sattvic jnana. Okay, that's the end of chapter 5. Hare Krishna. I'm sure you all completely understand these points. You don't have any questions about any of this. Because you're self-realized bhakti yogis who have knowledge of all of these inferior principles being mentioned here. Yes?
When Krishna is advising Krishna is advising Arjuna to ultimately come to the platform of pure devotional service, then why people are still practicing Ashtanga Yoga and Karma Karana and other things?
This is, I don't know, I can say I don't know, but this is a very broad kind of question. Mainly it's because they get stuck at a certain stage and then they don't go beyond that stage. Why they get stuck there, that's their attachment. They want they get stuck at Ashtanga Yoga generally is because they want siddhis. If they get stuck at Jnana Yoga, because they want liberation, because they're disgusted and they want to get free. And if they get stuck at Karma Yoga, it means they're attached to enjoying something in the material world. So even though Krishna's explaining, you know, that bhakti is the best, they can find their verses and, you know, just kind of get stuck there.
Yes, Srila Prabhupada is making it very clear that Krishna conscious practice is the easiest process.
But those people, they generally don't read our Prabhupada's books. They just read the shlokas with maybe commentary by Pantanjali or some other Baba or Sadhu. Yeah. And there's hundreds of translations of Bhagavad Gita. What was it that he only translated the first six chapters? Well, this is the local Baba here in Pune. There was some, they only translated the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, I can't remember. We shouldn't mention anyway. Okay, so anyway, there's many facets to that answer.
We saw how Lord is partially responsible.
Yes.
I was just reading somewhere that how demigod worship is a kind of, it's done with business mentality. Like if the child goes and gives the required money, then the shopkeeper doesn't hesitate to give cigarette to him. But he doesn't give him what he needs, but he gives him what he wants. But the Supreme Lord gives him only what he needs. That way the worship of the Supreme Lord is considered glorious.
Mm-hmm.
How do we understand here that Krishna is arranging whatever he wants?
Krishna cannot totally disregard the desire of the jiva and his minute will. He has to take that into account. The demigods, yes, it's true. It's just business. And the Paramatma, he also fulfills the desires of the living entity. Krishna, as Bhagavan, is in a different category. It's when someone approaches him, then he can slightly interfere. But that's after they already approach him. And the Paramatma, he just gives everybody what they desire also. But because he's situated on a higher platform, those who are approaching him or praying to him or meditating on him or sacrificing for him, they naturally get more than they get from the demigods. So demigods are temporary and the fruits are temporary. So naturally when they approach Vishnu, then their fruits are higher. Everything's escalated. So naturally Lord Vishnu is on a higher level than the demigods. And then Bhagavan's even further. And we'll get to that in the middle six chapters. But Paramatma, he's giving some more benefit just than the demigods. The purification is coming more with those who are approaching Lord Vishnu. Much more than those who approach the demigods.
This father aspect of the Lord is not applicable to Paramatma.
Mm, well, in one sense, because he maintains. But this, you know, we get into this discussion a lot more in the middle six chapters. When the Lord is different than, the Paramatma is compared to a cup of riksha tree who just gives what people desire. But still higher than what the demigods give. So he's impartial. But Bhagavan falls in love with his devotees. So therefore, he only gives them what's good for them. And sometimes he even takes away what's bad for them. Where the super soul wouldn't do that. Because the super soul doesn't fall in love with the Ashtanga yogis. No. But Bhagavan falls in love with his devotees, so he becomes like malleable or to his devotees' desires. And he just tries to bring the devotees to him by force, if necessary. Some Chaitanya Charan, you have a question?
In explaining for a Nishkam Karma Yogi, the intelligence plays a very great role.
Intense pleasure.
Intelligence.
Oh, his intelligence, yes.
To keep him away from sense objects.
Yeah. So Buddha Yoga.
Yeah. For a sadhak bhakta, how important is the intelligence?
For Bhakti Yoga. Yeah. Bhakti Yogi. Yeah, because we're going through the same stages. For us, it's also important until we come to Ruchi. When the taste kicks in, then Ruchi takes control. And it's Ruchi which carries us forward. But until then, it's determination, sense control, faith to the Guru, and scriptural knowledge which brings us forward. That's our vehicle. But at Ruchi, then that taste kicks in and that becomes more powerful to carry us. It's similar to this process here going on.
I heard somewhere that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that trying to overcome Maya with intelligence is like trying to pierce the iron block with a needle.
The eye of the
iron block.
Oh, iron block with a needle. In order to overcome Maya.
Right.
Well, we'd have to see in what context the statement is there. If he's talking about bhakti yogis and what stage is he talking about?
And Mama Maya, that he wants to emphasize surrender to Krishna. That is the emphasis.
Oh, right. Yes. Well, that's true. The intelligence is still necessary for all of these points that we're talking about. And that helps the devotee and the yogi both. Ultimately, there has to be surrender because the Lord is the controller of Maya. So just with the philosophy alone, one cannot conquer her. But without the philosophy, you know, it's like, unless your surrender is like really full on, full surrender, then you are not going to get enough energy from the Lord to carry you and to conquer Maya. So the knowledge from the scriptures, which is also the Lord's mercy, is also carrying the devotee so that he can at least show Maya Devi that he's serious, you know. And when she kind of increases her attack, he may realize that he can't actually conquer her, and then he surrenders to the Lord. And with the Lord's power, then and only then can he actually fully avoid her or conquer her. So it's not like one or the other. It doesn't have to be like that. Especially for the devotee, the knowledge of the scriptures is also bhakti. Yes?
You spoke about this very quickly attains Paramatma realization.
Mm-hmm.
But is it possible that at some point he's realized self he goes astray before realization of super soul?
Yes, of course, it's always possible. At any stage, someone can go astray. So even at that stage, it's possible. And this, the Lord is, the super soul realization is around the corner. But if he doesn't go around the corner, it'll be given to him. But as I said, if the realization isn't there, then he can become proud. And that's usually what happens. Okay, so we'll stop now because it's very late. Hare Krishna.